Welcome to The Word for Today, featuring the Bible teaching of Pastor Chuck Smith, founder of the Calvary Chapel Movement. This radio program is a verse-by-verse study through the entire Bible.
And on today's edition of The Word for Today, Pastor Chuck continues with the beheading of John the Baptist, as we pick up in Matthew chapter 14, verse 1. And now with today's message, here's Pastor Chuck.
This time, let's turn in our Bibles to Matthew's Gospel, chapter 14. And at that time, Herod the Tetrarch heard of the fame of Jesus. And he said to his servants, "This is John the Baptist. He's risen from the dead, and therefore mighty works do show forth themselves in him. For Herod had laid hold on John, and bound him, and put him in prison for Herodias' sake, his brother Philip's wife. For John said unto him, It is not lawful for thee to have her. And when he would have put him to death, he feared the multitude, because they counted him as a prophet. But when Herod's birthday was kept, and the daughter of Herodias danced before him and pleased Herod, whereupon he promised with an oath to give her whatsoever she would ask, she, being before instructed of her mother, said, Give me here John the Baptist's head in a charger. So the king was sorry, nevertheless, for the oath's sake, and them which sat at meat, he commanded that it be given to her. And he sent and beheaded John in the prison, and his head was brought in a charger and given to the damsel, and she brought it to her mother. And the disciples came and took up the body and buried it and went and told Jesus." Here we have the story of Herod and the beheading of John the Baptist. He was called Herod Antipas. He was the son of Herod the Great. The word tetrarch means the ruler over a fourth part. When Herod the Great died, he had many sons, but three of them were given rule over part of the territory that Herod the Great once governed. Herod Antipas, the one who had beheaded John the Baptist, was married to the daughter of a Nabatean king, Areta. And he went to Rome, where he visited his brother Philip, Herod Philip. And there he fell in love with Philip's wife. And he enticed her to leave his brother and to return with him as his wife. But in order to do this, he had to then divorce Areta, the daughter of the Nabatean king, which he did. And he took Herodias as his wife. Now, John the Baptist spoke out against that. John the Baptist was a straight shooter. And he said, it isn't lawful for you to do that. It wasn't lawful for him to put away Areta without a cause. And of course, it wasn't lawful to marry his brother's sister. So John the Baptist spoke out boldly against him, and he paid the price of incurring the displeasure of Herod, for Herod imprisoned him and would have put him to death, yet there was such a popular appeal that John had to the people, he was a little fearful of putting him to death. Josephus, in his Antiquities, the historic account of the Jews, helps us in this a little bit. He said that Herod actually was desiring to put him to death because of the tremendous popularity that John had among the people, and he was actually a little threatened by the popularity of John the Baptist. Herodias, ultimately, of course, was the downfall of Herod. She was a very cruel and cunning woman. She, of course, was upset because John had spoken out against the marriage, had a deep kind of desire for revenge, and so she allowed her daughter to dance for Herod on his birthday. Her daughter's name was Salome. The dances were of those Oriental type, which were very suggestive and sensuous. Salome was probably only 16 or 17, and for her mother to allow her to do this shows the fact that there was no real morality in the heart of Herodias at all. Very immoral woman. And when Herod's passions were aroused by the dance of Salome, in that, you know, moment of excitement and the applause for the dance and all with the crowd around, he said, "Ask whatever you want and I will give it to you." And her mother Herodias had already coached her in advance that she should ask for the head of John the Baptist on a charger. And when she made this request, of course, Herod wanted to back down, but he had made the promise, and so he held to it. Now, later on, when Caligula became the emperor of Rome, there was another son of Herod, Agrippa, that he sent to reign over some of the provinces of Israel, and he gave to Agrippa the title of king. And so you remember Paul addressing him, King Agrippa? Now, Herodias said to her husband, Herod Antipas, "Look, he has the title of king. You ought also to have the title of king," because she had this desire to be known as Queen Herodias. And so this real thing in her to be wanted to be known as queen, she put her husband up to going to Rome to talk to the emperor Caligula that he would give to Antipas also the title of king. However, Herod Agrippa heard of the plan, and so he sent messages ahead to Caligula and said, "Hey, Antipas is not to be trusted. He is very likely to rebel against you. He's looking for position and power." And so Caligula believed the report that he received from Agrippa. And when Antipas came requesting that he receive the title of king, instead of receiving it, he had taken a lot of money with him. And she said, "What's money, you know? Go and bribe, you know, Caligula for this title of king." Caligula took the money, but he banished Antipas to Gaul. So that was the end of his ambition, and that was the end of Herod Antipas. He and Herodias were, Caligula said, "Look, you can stay here if you want." But she said, "No, you know, I'll be with my husband." That's the only honorable thing she did. So she was banished with him to Gaul. The end of this man who fought the prophet of God because the prophet had enough courage to speak out against his sin, had him in prison. And so we read of the death of the cousin of Jesus, John the Baptist. And when Herod heard of all that Jesus was doing, though he had put John the Baptist to death, his conscience was probably still troubling him. He said, "This is John the Baptist. He's raised from the dead, and that's why he can do these marvelous works." He no doubt really believed that John the Baptist was indeed a true prophet. So now in verse 13, when Jesus heard of this horrible atrocity against John, it no doubt shocked him. And he went by ship into a desert place apart. Desert not meaning desert like the Mojave or Sahara, but a deserted place. Because there really isn't any real desert around the Sea of Galilee, but there are places that are deserted or uninhabited. And so he went to one of the uninhabited areas there across the Sea of Galilee. Over on the opposite side of the sea, there were several sort of deserted areas. So when the people had heard that he was leaving, they followed him on foot out of the cities. And when Jesus went forth, so he got around the other side, and here was a great multitude of people waiting for him. Now, the Sea of Galilee is only 8 miles across. And from the area of Capernaum, if you cross over to the area of Bethsaida or Gennesaret, it isn't really that far. And you can watch a little boat go all the way across. So as they're taking off for Capernaum, it's easy to tell which direction they're going. They just watch which direction they're going. Then the people run around the upper end of the lake, and then they'd be there waiting for him when he got to the other side. This must have been difficult. Here, you're troubled because of this horrible atrocity, and you're wanting to get alone for just a little bit to sort of, you know, put things together, get things in perspective. And so you try to get off alone and have just a little time to wait upon God and to pray and to sort of get yourself collected. And you get to the other side, and here's the whole multitude of people waiting there for you. Now, it would have been very easy for Jesus to have been brusque and say, "Look, I came over to get a rest. You know, can't you leave me alone?" And I know so many people who have a great ministry today who might do just that. But Jesus, when he saw the great multitude, was moved with compassion toward them. Oh, God, give us a heart for the ministry like Jesus. That whenever we see the people, rather than feeling, "Oh, no, you know, why do they have to come here? Don't they know I want to be alone?" That whenever we meet them, we are moved with compassion towards them. God, give us a heart of compassion towards the needs of people. And the needs of people always moved the heart of Jesus with compassion. He could not see a needy person without being moved with compassion towards them. And he healed their sick. Spent time with them. Now, many of these people were not really seeking him. All they were seeking was help, the healing of their sick. And it would be very easy to sort of jump on the crowd and to needle them and get after them, because all you want is the benefits. You really don't want to make the commitment, and that was so true. But Jesus never chided them. He never got on them. He just went ahead and ministered to them freely, and I love him for that. Now, when it was evening, his disciples came to him, and they said, "This is a deserted place, and the time is now past. You better send the multitude away that they might go into the villages and buy themselves some food." But Jesus said unto them, "They don't need to depart. Give them to eat." And they said unto him, "We only have 5 loaves and 2 fish. And he said, "Bring them to me." And he commanded the multitude to sit down on the grass. And he took the 5 loaves and the 2 fishes, and looking up to heaven, he blessed, and he broke, and he gave the loaves to his disciples, and the disciples to the multitude, and they did all eat and were filled. The word "filled" in Greek is glutted, or that it would be a more appropriate translation. They all ate and were stuffed. And they took up of the fragments that remained 12 baskets full. And they that had eaten were about 5,000 men beside the women and children. So here is that recording of the marvelous multiplication of the loaves and the fishes to feed the 5,000. Now there are those who have difficulty with miracles, and so when they read this story, they try to read into it a plausible explanation to remove the miraculous from it. We are told that these five loaves and two fish came from a little boy who probably, when he told his mother, "I want to go over and see Jesus," she packed him a lunch. And so when the multitude was there, they said, "Lord, you better send them away that they might buy food." And he said, "No, they're hungry. They might faint in the way. Let's feed them." And they said, "We had several thousand dollars worth of bread. We couldn't feed this crowd." Jesus said, "Well, what do you have?" And Andrew said, "There's a little kid over here with five loaves and two fish, but what's that to a multitude like this?" And so the little boy came and gave his five loaves and two fishes to Jesus, and he then blessed them and broke the bread and distributed it. And there are those who explain that in those days they wore these long robes and they had sleeves that tied at the wrist. And quite often people carried bread and fish in their sleeves. And that when everybody was hungry, and they all knew they were hungry, everybody was so selfish, none was willing to share their own little lunch that they had tied in their sleeves. But when the little boy came forth and offered to Jesus his five loaves and two fishes, everyone was so touched and moved by the beautiful example of this little child. They all untied their sleeves and shared with each other, and there was really enough there that they could gather 12 basketfuls after everybody had eaten. And so it was the touching example of a little child that moved the multitude, and isn't that a beautiful story? God's got a hot place for men who try to mess with the word. And immediately Jesus constrained the disciples to get into a ship and go before him to the other side while he sent the multitudes away. So he said to the disciples, "Now look, go ahead and get in the boat and go over to the other side. I'll send the multitude away." And when he had sent the multitudes away, he went up into a mountain apart to pray, and when the evening was come, he was there alone. Now notice this, and I think this is important to note. It had been an extremely hard day. Jesus had received the news of the horrible atrocity his cousin, John, had been beheaded by Herod. And he felt it sort of imperative to just get alone for a while. So he got into the ship with the disciples, and they headed over to the other side. But the people, seeing the direction where they were going, ran around the upper part of the Galilee and met him when the ship landed. And here was the multitude. And Jesus spent the day ministering to them. He's weary emotionally because of what had happened to John. No doubt wearied physically by ministering to these people, being pressed by them all the day long. Up until the evening, he feeds them, and then he sends them away as the disciples are heading back. Hard day, troubling news, physically exhausted. Time to really flake out. But instead, He went up into a mountain apart to pray. Oh, the importance that prayer had in the life of Jesus. Now, if he, being the Son of God, felt the necessity to be strengthened through prayer on these kind of occasions, how much more we weak, failing disciples or followers of him need to spend time in prayer to be strengthened by God. We would say, oh, it's time to really get a rest, you know. I really need to get a nap. I really need to get my strength. But instead, he went up and spent the evening, the night in prayer, according to another gospel. But prayer was his place of strength. He discovered it to be a place of great strength, even as you can discover that prayer is a place of great strength indeed.
We'll return with more of our verse-by-verse Bible study in the book of Matthew on our next broadcast, as Pastor Chuck continues to teach through the Bible. And we do hope you'll make plans to join us. But right now, if you'd like to order a copy of today's message, simply order Matthew 14 when visiting thewordfortoday.org. And while you're there, be sure to browse the many additional biblical resources by Pastor Chuck. You can also subscribe to the Word for Today podcast or sign up for our email subscription. Once again, that's thewordfortoday.org. For those of you wishing to call, our toll-free number is 1-800-272-WORD, and our office hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Again, that's 1-800-272-9673. If you prefer to write, our mailing address is The Word for Today, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And now, on behalf of The Word for Today, we'd like to thank all of you who share in supporting this ministry with your prayers and financial support. And be sure to join us again next time as Pastor Chuck continues his verse-by-verse study through the Bible. That's right here on the next edition of The Word for Today. And now, once again, here's Pastor Chuck.
May the Lord watch over you as you go. May his hand be upon your life for good. May the Lord bless you and strengthen you and fill you with his Holy Spirit, that you might walk in his love, that you might be an instrument through which he works his work of love in a world that is filled with hate and suspicion. May your life be as a light shining in a dark place, bringing hope to those who sit in darkness. In Jesus' name.
This program has been sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.
As I look around for a godly example of what a Christian woman should be, I see a lot of women who are concerned about what they look like. But rarely do I see a woman who desires the reflection of Jesus Christ. For this very reason, Kay Smith has written a book for women entitled Reflecting God. Kay teaches women godly attributes, such as how to be joyful when things aren't going so great, or how to be sincere when praying for others, or inspiring them, or how to nurture and influence the people God has placed around you. As Kay teaches God's attributes, women will begin to have the mind of Christ. And as this starts to happen within you, outwardly you will become a reflection of God to a world that desperately needs him. For more information on how to order the book Reflecting God by Kay Smith, as well as an optional study guide to lead a women's Bible study, visit thewordfortoday.org to see a preview of this book, or call us at 800-272-WORD.